Okay, good morning to you all. Welcome again. It's good to see hear the chatter of seasoned teachers. My guess is that if we could somehow compile the chatter into a monologue of some sort that you could follow, the discussions might be worth more than what I'm going to be talking about, because I know how it happens. Real teachers talk about the real issues that they're facing. And so if I miss you a bit in some of the things I talk about, well, forgive me. I will try again to make some space at the end to see if we can have a little bit of chatter, group chatter. And if I forget, somebody remind me that we are to ask the blessing on the meal, I think, here before we leave. So yesterday, I think I forgot that. Very pleased to have a special guest with me here today. This is my wife, in the back, Sheila. And so between her and my son, Kyle, you can be assured I don't speak out of turn, because they know me. But let's begin with prayer. Thanks, Lord, for the grace you've given us. Thanks for the schools that are represented here, the communities. And thanks for these people, these gentlemen and ladies, brothers and sisters, who have committed themselves to the education of the children in our communities. Pray for wisdom today and understanding, Holy Spirit direction and inspiration, and help us to walk with you in every way. We pray in Christ. Amen. Yesterday, we talked about self-evaluation as in terms of developing as a teacher, and kind of used a number of handle holds there, anchors, ropes, and friends, encouraging us to be anchored in the right places, have the ropes strong in friends we trust, and through some of those methods, evaluate where we're at to where we're going. Today, the subject is intentional growth. I'm reminded of what it was like in 1978 when I started to teach school. There were more subjects in the repertoire of seminars that dealt with survival than there were growth. In those days, we opened the doors and shoved the teacher through the door and said, "I hope you can make it." And maybe that's the way you feel too, I don't know. But I want to say there's been progress made in 30 years. It really has. There's good. I like that affirmation over there. We really have. I think there is a better foundation offered to teachers now than what there was at one time. So at any rate, today we're tapping into some of that, talking about intentional growth and how we can grow as teachers. I don't know how to talk about issues except just to talk about them out of my own life and experiences. So as I sat down to think about this subject, and well, what should I say? I ended up just simply going back to my own experience and saying, well, in the 34 years, Melvin, that you've taught school, what were the ways in which you grew and became a better teacher? And so much of what I share with you will come out of that, or just simply be from my own experience. And there are a few issues or a few items in here that we'll talk about that did not necessarily come from my own experience. So, intentional growth. Howard Hendrickson, I believe, is the person that should be credited with this quote: "When you stop learning, you stop growing." And you might say you stop teaching. Do you ever get to the top of the hill? The answer is no. You're always on that learning curve somewhere. And hopefully you make it along the curve somewhere. But when you stop learning yourself, you stop teaching, you stop growing. Here's a great verse from Psalm chapter 1, verse you're very, very familiar with, but one I love and have grown to or have embraced many times. Here it goes, and he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. Of course, the psalm begins, blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, and so on. Note that I underscored the phrase that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. Be really interesting to just stop and have you talk about where you're at on that growth curve and what kind of fruit is being produced. You know what? I'm 56 years old and have taught school for a number of years and have found out that there's a different set of expectations for me than what there are for person who has taught for 5 years, and I suppose that's fair, but I thought to myself, well, so what, where should I be at? What kind of fruit should I have? And some of the things we want to talk about is this thing of bringing forth or being able to contribute to our communities appropriately for our experience and all of that. So bring forth fruit in his season, his leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. The picture here, of course, is of a tree. And that symbolism is very, very good. We could think about it in a number of ways. Here's a tree that it can make it through the tough times. It prospers. It brings forth fruit. It's planted by the rivers of water. Waters, I believe it actually says. Rivers of water. It's fed by water. It's got good soil. It's got roots that are down. I like to talk about roots. You can have a lot of other things in place, but if the tree doesn't have a healthy root system, it has no way of actually appropriating all the stuff that is around it. So there can be the best of soil and the best of water and the best of fertilizer and the perfect conditions, but no good root system, no growth. And so in some ways, what we talk about here today is establishing that root system so that when the season comes, you move from 5th and 6th grade to 9 and 10, or you now become the administrator, or you are teaching 1st and 2nd for the first time in your life or whatever, there's a system there that can take up what's needed in order for you to do the job that you're being asked to do. In some ways, that's what I'm thinking about as we talk about this thing. A couple areas of needed growth. Again, from my experience, the kinds of things that we want to focus on today a bit, or maybe just survey them. First, people skills. And I kind of have them in the order that I think they ought to be. Frankly, most teachers seem to think if they just learn more about their content, if they could just go to that summer course at the local college or whatever and take that course on Algebra 1 or 2 or History or Culture or whatever it is, and if they could just get the content down, then everything would straighten out and move along in the right direction. Now, hear me right. I'm not saying that's not a good idea and it doesn't work and that it's I'm not saying that it's something you should not do. You should. Should always grow in content. But I'm amazed. The really good teachers, oftentimes it's not the content that makes them a very good teacher. It's other issues. And so you have to begin here, I think, with people skills. Now I use the big word here, sociology. How do people get along with each other? How do we interact with each other? And it seems to me as though there has to be some movement and growth here over the years, or at least there ought to be, where you have a greater and greater and greater capacity to sit down with that. I take it, Brother John, you were talking about disabled students or learning disabilities or whatever. A greater capacity to actually analyze, think, interact, encourage, move that student along to success. People skills. That's a whole subject in itself. We could spend the rest of the time talking about that one, but that's a big area I think we need to do better at. Organization, classroom management. I think In my 34 years of teaching, and particularly as an older teacher, the questions I get asked the most often, the ones that repeat themselves over and over again, are typically classroom management questions. Actually, how to manage and make that classroom work. Notice the term I'm using here is organization. Just, what's the simple term here, the phrase? Do you have your act together when you walk into the classroom? I'll be honest with you, most of the time I feel like I don't. So I work and work and work at it, and after a while you just quit because it's time to go give that speech or teach that class or whatever. You just quit somewhere along the line and say, well, that's the way it is. But the faster you can manage organization, the better. In my first 3 years of teaching, I'm not going to recount all of those. Taught under John D. Martin. He and I taught the entire high school. I was busy. So busy. I prepared sometimes for the next class in the 3 minutes between that class and the next one. I was not prepared. Boy, but did it ever train me to cut out the unnecessary stuff and just focus on what has to be done and how to get that stuff together just pretty quick. Not the right way to do things, but it pushed me to increase my organizational skills. You can talk to Mrs. Lehman afterwards, and she'll say, I'm pretty far down on the learning curve there, but I've made some headway over the years, I think. Next, teacher skills. I put this one intentionally last, pedagogy. Just simply the skill of teaching. People skills, organizational skills, and then teacher skills. I'm reminded of a verse in Ecclesiastes. It talks about the little foxes that spoil the vines, and I've often heard pastors use that passage to talk about the little things that actually kind of tend to undo us. I'm going to hit you with a couple here that I'm amazed at. Number one, penmanship. Penmanship. You can tell I'm a little older here. You know, when I went to school, fifth and sixth grade public schools, they came around. We had a penmanship teacher who traveled around and taught us how to write. I think penmanship skills over the years have gone to pieces. Now, maybe I'm wrong, and as I said, I know what it's like to be an older person just kind of grousing around about everything that's gone bad, but it's one that irritates me. When I get papers, I can barely read. Okay, well, think about yourself at that blackboard or wherever you're exercising penmanship skills, and remember you're teaching something yourself by the way you do penmanship. So pay attention here. Secondly, spelling. There's nothing as unhandy as being at the front of a classroom trying to teach a class, and about 50% of the words you don't know how to spell. Okay? Now again, don't hear me getting all over whatever. It's just that I do know that I taught with a teacher, master's degree. Bright, a good person in a lot of ways. But to this day, the students who had him will make fun of his spelling. He was forever. You can see about there kind of fumble around a little bit, that after a while he'd kind of write something down and hope it was right. You know. Again, don't hear me looking down my nose. I know that I'm just pointing out it's an issue. Speed reading. I'm not a good speed reader. The person you need to talk to here is Steve Brubaker. He can read books faster than anybody I've ever known in my life. And somehow pick up all of the content. But if you're a slow reader, you can see that this is a skill that's going to slow you down in terms of your skill as a teacher. Vocabulary, just building vocabulary, communication skills, they all speak for themselves. My point here is there is no panacea. One little simple thing that fixes it. And so now you really, this is the area if you grow in, you'll be a good teacher. It really is a composite. And a lot of times, your really good teachers have just paid some attention to the little foxes. Kind of gotten them, worked at them a bit. I'll tell you a story here in a bit about one that I had to work on, still working on. But I'll wait till we get to it. So those are the three biggies. People skills, organization, teacher skills. That we need to be growing in.
Now, specifically, to grow intentionally, I believe I have about 12 points that come out of my own personal experience, and I share them with you. No attempt here just to be pious and holy, but I mean this for what it says. Develop the disciplines of meditation and prayer. You teach out of who you are. And who you are is the most, is defined the best by who you are in Christ. Or your perception of God and your perception of how He's working in your life and the lives of people around you. There are no shortcuts here. I can't say I have done this 100% of the time, but my very, the most productive moments of my life, of my day, are somewhere between 5 o'clock and 7 o'clock in the morning. And during that, sometimes a little earlier, sometimes a little later, but right in that section of time is when I sit down and I pray and I meditate and I think, and then I begin to read. And it feels like that's the time when I could soak it up and I could get somewhere with it. If I'm doing it at school, of course I can do it there, but just not as well. So the discipline of meditation and prayer, Psalm 119 is true. Oh, how love I thy law, it is my meditation all the day. Thou through thy commandments hast made me wiser than mine enemies. Do you believe that? For they are ever with me. For they are ever with me. They're in your classroom sometimes, or at least it feels that way. I have more understanding than all my teachers. For thy testimonies are my meditation. I even understand more than the ancients. Socrates, Plato, give the list. All those people that we look at. I understand more than them. Why? Because I keep thy precepts. I literally believe that. The fact of the matter is, these are not just words that are spoken to make us feel good about doing a little devotional. We a teaching that flows out of a relationship with God and an understanding of God's will and what He intends for His people is good teaching. And I just suggest that one number first. To grow, number one, no, to grow intentionally. Number two, be wholesome and be holy. Listen carefully. Growing as a teacher happens as much outside of the classroom, if not more, as it does in. If you need to grow, how do I want to say this? One of the reasons that I still do a little farming and I still do a little mechanical work. I grew up as a farmer with my dad on a dairy farm, and I was trained as a mechanic and did diesel mechanic work for a number of years in my youth, and worked on baler knotters and all those kinds of things. I still do those things off and on. It's good for me. Teachers have a tendency to be, what should I say, not complete people sometimes. Not speaking that to you, but to you know how it is. You have those Google-eyed glasses, and you're poring over books, and you're computer whizzes, and you're this, and you're that, and you're the other thing. Well, be more than that. Be wholesome. We could talk here for a while on this one. I don't want to take too much time. But even the business of taking care of your body is important. Somebody was talking about a profile. Who was that? That was you, Howard. Brother Howard. Again, no, not throwing any stones, nothing like that, but pay attention. A healthy body is a good body to bring into a classroom. Okay? And I told you, I've had Crohn's disease. So I know what it's like not to feel healthy. I know what it's like to feel healthy. But to be wholesome is to go out there and do a little running, do a little playing, do a little jumping, work hard, have some skills. And that's what I mean by this. Don't try to fix all of your teacher problems by thinking about what happens in the classroom and what you do as a teacher. Think about the things that you are doing outside of teaching and ask yourself, how does that contribute to my skill as a teacher? For me, that has been a very important point. Third, accept new assignments.
Here's I want to tell you the story. Now, you're going to pick me apart here on this, but it'll be okay because this will sensitize you to my speaking ability. When I first started teaching school, one of John Martin's friends told him, "You know what? I wouldn't teach with a fellow whose English is that bad." Well, you know how high that made me feel. You know, I didn't put it in the list here, but humility is a very important one. Here's what I said to John. I said, "Okay, you know what? That's an area that I should work on. How would you recommend I work on it?" He said, "Well, I'll tell you what. This year, we'll have you teach 7th and 8th English." Oh, I hate English. And what we'll do is, once a month, I'll point out to you where there's a problem with your usage and that type of thing. And we'll just work on them one at a time. And while you teach and while you speak and while you have those English students, we'll work at this problem. I gulped and said, "Okay." So what we'll do, so I taught that year a course that is probably one of my least, somewhere down on the list anyway, of the courses that I enjoy teaching. But I did that because I wanted to grow. And it will take some humility if you want to grow. Sometimes you just simply have to take it on the chin. I wouldn't teach with a person who has that bad of English. Take it on the chin and ask yourself, so what am I going to do about that? Whether he would or not is not the point. The fact of the matter is, I have an area in which I need to grow. So, accept a new assignment that will push you hard in an area where you need to grow. That's the point here. Fourth, accept challenging assignments. If you'll always take the easy ones, well, the growth curve is not as sharp. And there's a limit to this, and please understand, you can't take on 3 new challenges this year and expect to come out at the right place. But take on a few. A new challenge, one that you're outside of your comfort zone. You're getting pushed around. And just go right ahead and jump into that thing. And see how it goes. This year, I'm being forced into one. I think that Mr. Miller and the high school staff has decided to go to block teaching. I'm not all that familiar with that. I haven't done much of it. It's coming on this year. So I don't even think I have the opportunity to accept or reject. That's kind of like it's on me. But new challenges, face them and embrace them and enjoy them and grow with them is the way to do those things. Fifth, read widely and with a plan. Notice with a plan. If I actually listed for you the books that I have read in the last 3 years, you might be surprised with the small number that they are. I didn't list them, so I'm not quite sure how many books they are. One of the reasons they are relatively small is because I try to be careful to read things that really are going to be helpful. Do I ever read a novel? Yes. But when I do, I actually try to think to myself, how will this be helpful? No, I know sometimes we just read for fun, and I'm not telling you that you can never do that. I'm just simply saying that read widely, but read with a plan. What is it that you want to know? Somebody just gave me 4 volumes of World War I. They must be that thick, a total. I must admit, they know I enjoy history, and so they purchased these books for me. And I know they're going to ask me, have you read those books? And I'm kind of, leafing through them and trying to find the pieces in there that are pertinent and all of that. But, I think I'll develop a plan to read through them, okay, and find see what's there that could be mine from those books. Read classics. Leo Tolstoy, I enjoy reading Tolstoy's books. Read books that are deep and profound and stimulating. Try to stay away from the ones that are really light. You heard me say there's a time to read some light stuff. I'm not arguing that point, but that certainly should not be the general diet of a teacher who is learning and growing. Sixth, teach in diverse, in unusual scenarios. Really, if you have these opportunities, take them. Let me give you a couple of them that, for me, have been it's been good to do. For 15 years back in Chambersburg, every Thursday evening went to a Bible study, a prison Bible study. Let me tell you, when you're sitting in front of inmates, wide variety, all kinds of backgrounds and this and that and the other thing, it pushes you differently than when you're in a classroom of Anabaptist children who have had some training and so forth. Methods change. Approaches change. In fact, in prisons, you learn to be really fast on your feet because you never know what's coming. So that was one for me. Another one was Sheila and I took a group, went to Canada 1 year, and I taught Bible school up there among the natives. I'll never forget running into a situation. I was supposed to teach eighth grade out at, I believe it was Poplar Hill. And got there, were no students. Well, what fun. So the gentleman in charge there said, I don't know what we'll do. Went to church on Sunday, and there was a little cabin there, a little Indian cabin of some sort. Walked out of the cabin. Here was a couple sitting there, a young Indian couple, probably, I don't know, early 20s, something like that. They were going to get married, ladies pregnant. And I couldn't understand them, but I asked the person in charge there later on, what do they have to say? And he said, well, they want to become Christians. He said, I have an idea. You have no students, right? And these people are sitting around all the time. I'm thinking that maybe you could teach them. You could take this week and sit down and give them some. I gulped. I was a young man at that time and said, okay. It was a great experience. You know, those people did not know who Adam and Eve were. They honestly didn't. Now, they could barely speak English, for one thing. And then by the time we got, you know, I went back to my cabin that first night, and I said, now, wait a minute. How would you become a Christian if you don't even know who Adam, you never heard of Mary, nor Adam and Eve? How could that be? How do you teach these people who want to be Christians, who really know nothing about it? Where do you begin? Great experience for me. Really pushed me to some places that I hadn't been to before. Poland. We've been involved in Poland for a number of years, and they're spoken or taught an entire weekend seminar that needed to be translated. And if you've ever taught with a when you have to be translated, it makes you teach differently. You learn how to whittle out the stuff that's unimportant. You don't talk like I'm talking this morning. You get that stuff down to a place where you're saying the essential things, and you're trying to say them as clearly as possible. That's a good discipline for a teacher. It really is. Currently at Meadville Mennonite Chapel in town, we're getting rubbing shoulders with the culture there. And by the way, it's been an eye-opener for me. These are people who are three and four generations from being churched. And that's a big difference. And you teach them quite differently than you do somebody who has been to church regularly for the last number of years. My point is, teach in diverse and unusual scenarios. It actually will sharpen your skills as a teacher. And you'll be in a good place to move ahead on the learning curve. Seventh, pursue stimulating and productive hobbies. Here I am, again, outside of the class. Okay? I love to garden. My wife is glad I do. But it's one of my ways of, stepping aside from teaching. It's productive. I learn things. I look at new plants. I think about how to grow these. Why isn't this growing? That feeds right into my chemistry. When I'm teaching chemistry, I begin to think about
how fertilizers work and this and that and the other things. So just pursuing that one thing does this type of thing for you. Art, music, carving, some of these are hobbies. And I really strongly encourage you to pursue hobbies that are stimulating and productive. They feed into your teaching in the most unusual ways. Continuing, master new and essential skills. And I want you to notice that I made sure here to say essential. I'll put up three here that I think is good, particularly if you're in a community that is fine with computers and all that. I tend to be very task-oriented. Listen, I'll be very blunt with you. All that electronic gadgetry can make you a poor teacher, can take you away from some good things. But there are pieces that really work for you. They will. They're strong workhorses. They'll pull hard for you. When I find one of those, even if I am a little older and have gray hair, I will tackle it. I will learn that skill because I know it's a very powerful skill. So word processing, I think probably most of you, spreadsheets, very, very, very powerful in their capabilities and capacities. And as a teacher, if you have opportunity, you need to learn that. Is a gentleman here in the congregation who is teaching Excel? I guess not. Excel is a spreadsheet. And quite frankly, much to the chagrin of some of the administrators around here, I'd far rather use that spreadsheet than the grading programs that are used in many schools. They drive me crazy. Because I'm not quite sure how the thing works. It's a skill to learn. So I figured out by now that that's what administrators are going to pitch at you, so I may as well learn it. But with that spreadsheet, I can just do with a grade whatever I want. I can manipulate that thing and do add and subtract and fly around. And I mean, it's honest now, mind you, but I'm just saying that you've really got options in front of you if you know how to run that spreadsheet. So I run two, actually. At my computer down in my office, I have a grade book, and that grade book is Excel sheets. And then I enter those grades from there into the program that the school uses here. Just saying. But that's task-oriented, you understand. It's something that I use. So I'm going to take the time to master it. PowerPoint, I keep telling people it's the last frontier for me. You see a couple things up here. The next piece that comes along, I'm done. I'm quitting. That's probably not quite true. But even this piece of equipment, I hope you're not disappointed with how bare bones I am. I don't see any point to the really, 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 really fancy stuff. It needs to work for you. If they begin to consume time and energy that actually could be far better spent in studying more into the subject or whatever, discard it. Don't do it. Just stay away from the thing. But those pieces that really will work for you and save time, take the time to learn how to use them. Now, again, I realize I'm a little older and I have to be careful to hear what I say, but I'll repeat. There's too much junk on the market today that is not useful for you as a teacher. And I just would encourage you, learn how to limit that. Not every new thing is useful. I guess I'm a chip off the old block. My dad was a dairy farmer, and he always said, well, when a new item comes out, let that thing on the market for about 10 years till they find out if it's even going to stick to begin with. And second of all, let somebody else work out the bugs. Why me? And so I grew up, and we still carried milk over to the tank and poured it through a strainer. That's the way we did things there. 9, surround yourself with stimulating and challenging people. Already talked about a mentoring teacher. Stimulating and challenging people are people who will ask you the hard questions. Some of you have seen the article that I wrote on A Kingdom of God. I keep being pushed to publish it, and I'm not ready to do that at all. But you know what? I sent it to actually a relative of mine, and he works at the University of Madison,
University of Wisconsin, I mean, in Madison. A good man, a lot of ways, but I knew one thing: I would get criticized. I would get stimulated. He's an evolutionist. He's a whole lot of other things. And so when I sent that thing to him, and he read, but sure, I got a whole pile of stuff back from him. They weren't pats on the back. He was nice. He was kind, but he was very clear. Okay. You can avoid that if you want to, but you may as well talk to the people who will ask you the hard questions and push you at the hard places. And when you do that, they're the people who really will stimulate you if you can stick with them. Now, you don't want unkind people. I understand that. But if you find people who really maybe are not on the same page as you are, talk to them about the issues that you're up against or whatever. And you'll be surprised at what you learn if you can be humble enough just to take it on the chin a couple of times, take a few slaps and hits, and just get back up and dust off and say thank you and go on. But really, it's important. Now, I don't want to just be negative about this. I want to be positive. The fact of the matter is, find people who are good at what they do. And when I say attach yourself to them, of course, you can't be too bothersome. But at the same time, most people who have some skill, whether it's wood carving or whatever it is, are glad to talk with you about what they're doing. Do such. And maybe just a story here, a quick story. A friend of mine who worked for NASA for a number of years. I learned a big lesson from him. Computer programmer back in the 70s and the 80s, made big bucks at NASA and all this kind of stuff. Doesn't work there anymore. But developed a friendship with him, and he was forever calling me, he'd call. He'd say, Brother Melvin, I'm wanting to buy a chainsaw, and I have some questions for you, because he knew I was a mechanic and had worked with chainsaws years ago and all that type of thing. As he began firing, and no question from him was too lowly. I was surprised. Here is this guy with a number of master's degrees and worked for NASA and all that stuff. But when he wanted information, there was no question that was too far down the list. So I would say, well, you know, that particular kind of engine just has brass bearings in it. You say, pardon me, Brother Bell, what's a brass bearing? Oh, okay. But you get the idea. The point is he was willing to ask very, very simple questions to somebody he assumed knew something about an engine. Well, then why shouldn't I ask him questions about NASA or about information coming in? He was working on the Voyager program at that time, the flyby past Jupiter and things like that. Why not ask questions and learn what I can learn? Because he does it. Little humility here helps. To surround yourself with stimulating and challenging people. I want you to notice, I put this one as number 10. Take advanced courses of study. I am not opposed to college. I'm not. I'm not opposed to taking college courses. Just beware, they are typically not the thing that will fix the teacher problems you have. Okay? They're useful in their right place. And I am saying they will help you grow. I took a course in German one time back in Chambersburg. It was an evening class from a Wilson College there nearby. And you know, don't you dare start speaking to me in German, because I'll be totally lost. But one of the things I learned there is I did learn something about how to go about teaching a foreign language to a group of people who know nothing about it. Here was a guy, he was one of the best in the world, they said, and he was teaching German. So I walked away having learned something by taking a course of study that I can't really speak to you, that I can say Danke and a few things like that, you know. But in terms of German, I'm not a German speaker. But I learned. If you've got some space in your schedule and all of that, I encourage it. Just be aware it doesn't fix all the problems. To grow intentionally, number 11, take in seminars. And I couldn't help but tuck in that parenthesis there.
Glad you're here. I will admit to you that seminars can get old. One of the things I do here is I'm the wastewater operator. Can you believe that? So I have the license for that. Well, I have to take a seminar about, I have to have so many hours every year of extended study in wastewater management and water management in order to maintain my license. So you got to go to seminars. Well, the way I view it is if I got to go to a seminar, I'm going to pick one that I want to learn. I mean, they've got thousands of them that you can take to keep this wastewater license up. But I want the ones that are really going to be helpful. Okay, so I kind of pick and choose through them, and right now I'm trying to figure out which ones. You know, this very day was one I wanted to take badly, and here I'm here. Praise the Lord. But take seminars in. They are useful. Maybe in a more general sense, the genius of the seminar is you have a condensed version of the best that a particular person in a field can put together in 1 hour or whatever. What he's done is he's pulled that all together and condensed it, and if he's good, he gives you what he knows about that subject in 1 hour. Now, it doesn't mean you know everything. It just means he gives it to you. That's the advantage of the seminar. And the last one that I have is write. I don't even know if this one should be last. If you want to learn, write. Well, I want to sort out a subject in my head. That's what I do. I just start writing on it. Okay? Because you soon run into the places where, boy, that doesn't make sense. But how would you? Now, here's the thing. This is an honest confession. I hate to write. I really do. It's work for me. Some people, but for me, it's work. And but I have found it's good work for a teacher to sit down and take a subject and just work at that thing and write and go back and read it the next day. I suppose you've all had this experience. You read it the next day, you say, what in the world was I thinking? That doesn't make any sense. And discard it, start again. So I encourage you to do some writing as you grow as a teacher. Okay, we're out of time. Just a verse or two here for you. But other fell into good ground. Talked about roots and soil and brought forth fruit, some 100-fold, some 60-fold, some 30. And who hath ears to hear, let him hear. So those are my 12 points on intentional growth. In 2 minutes, give me the best you've got. And everybody keep your ears open and pencils ready. Who'll be first? Intentional growth. What have you done in the past 2 years to grow, maybe?
I visited my son in Europe and experienced Ireland.
There you go. Foreign travel is good. Excellent. Another. Visit other schools. Excellent. One, two a year or whatever. That's great. Good. Next. Keep up with your friends or missionaries. There you go. Great sources of information and things that you never even dreamed of. Yes?
Give a topic.
There you go. If you're asked to share something, do it. Good.
Volunteer at an orphanage for a month in December.
Say again?
Volunteer at an orphanage.
Uh-huh. Volunteer at an orphanage. There you go. The people skills. You'll learn something there you're not going to learn anywhere else. Good. Next. Keep up with current events. Oh, yes. Yes, I think there's a topic on that tomorrow, isn't there? That's good. Another.
Sing with Oasis.
Sing with Oasis. There you go. Another. Okay, we're out of time, but talk with each other about the things that have helped you to grow as a teacher. And I hope these things have been helpful to you. Howard, do I turn it back to you again? Okay, I'll do that. And I suppose you asked the prayer yesterday, didn't you? Thank you.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.